Welcome to Empire Building. I'm Wendy Papazan, and together with my four co-hosts, we bring you weekly unfiltered conversations about leadership, growing a big empire, and living on your own terms.
I'm Kimber Lovett-Minkiti. We are investors and wealth builders with over $75 million in combined net worth.
I'm Sarah Reynolds. We are visionaries who've built more than 50 businesses with over $122 million in annual revenue.
I'm Tiffany Fikes. We've led thousands of people and do it all while being pretty good moms.
And I'm Seychelle Van Poole. We are your podcast to learn how to build big businesses and even bigger lives.
Welcome, our amazing listeners, to a new week, a new episode of the Empire Building Podcast. I am so excited to be in our studio with the one, the only, Wendy.
Here we are again. 6 years later, we're still here. We're still recording. We're still coming up with things for our listeners. And actually, I went for a walk with my friend Jenny this morning, and she was just telling me how much she enjoyed our latest episode. So hopefully you guys are, we appreciate you guys for continuing to listen. Hopefully you're still getting stuff out of it because we're still enjoying it. I always learn from you, Sarah, and my other amazing co-host. So excited to be here again.
It's amazing how over 6 years of recording this podcast every Monday, having an episode drop for over 6 years, it's amazing how much better we've gotten too over the years. And so thank you, listeners, for like many of you have been along the journey the entire time with us.
Some of you started out young and in your 20s, and now you maybe you've had three kids. Maybe you've gotten married.
Yeah.
Since we started. Who knows? Who knows?
Where were you when the Empire Building Podcast first launched? And what's your life like now? We want to hear about it.
Yeah. Send us a message. Yeah. Well, today we got a really exciting episode for y'all. We're going to be talking about ways to make more money on every deal. So there are ways that you're negotiating and honestly, you're leaving money on the table. And we have master negotiator here, Sarah Reynolds, who wrote this incredible episode. I already know I'm going to be sharing this with my team when we're finished with this episode and probably everybody I know. So it's going to be a good one.
Yeah. So we've come up with seven things that are potentially taking away your next paycheck and or reducing it. And so we're going to dive in here and start with our first one, which I was sharing some of these things with my team. And I said, you know, you guys got into the real estate business. You didn't get into being a psychic business. And they all looked at me like, what? Well, the first thing that could be stealing your next check is trying to predict the future, right? So you are not a psychic. You are a problem solver.
Plus, if you were a psychic, you'd be on your island right now and you wouldn't be slanging houses anymore.
Exactly. So let's just admit right now that we're not on our island. We still have to sell houses. And so we cannot predict the future. One of the biggest mistakes that I have seen agents make and that I've made over the years is we make assumptions. So every single day, life happens for us. It also happens for our clients. And so our clients might have said something a week ago or a month ago that was true then, but then changes happen every day to their situation, to why they want to move, to why they want to sell, or why they want to buy their next home. And so making assumptions, right? Like what are some assumptions that many times are made in this industry?
The buyer's not going to come up.
Yeah.
Not in this market. No, they're not going to. I know they're not going to change their price.
Yeah. So like assuming no matter what, that the buyer's not going to come up, right?
Or the seller is never going to accept that price.
That's right. You get an offer and you're just like, well, I know right away that the seller is not going to accept it. Many times we're saying this to ourselves and we're saying this to other agents, to our clients. Yeah. Right away, starting it off. Before even talking to the client, sometimes we're saying it.
I mean, I don't know how many home sales you've had, Sarah. I don't, so many, but you know, we're at 2,500 home sales and I've often thought that seller's never going to accept it. And I don't know exactly how many times that has not come true, but it's certainly many, many times in the course of my 17 years where we've submitted an offer and the seller's just signed it and sent it back to us. So
we had a situation last week where the seller rejected the first offer. And then last week we got a new offer that was $20,000 lower than the first offer that they rejected. And our agent thought they knew what the seller was going to do. And sure enough, that seller was like, no, I want this done. And so
yeah.
weeks ago, they didn't want to be done. Now they want to be done. And we were able to put that transaction together for our clients. But the agent's mindset going into it was like, well, they didn't accept the last offer. They're certainly not going to accept this new offer for $20,000 less. Well, guess what? They did.
Yeah.
And so every single day, things change. And so our job is not to predict the outcome. Like, we don't know the outcome, right? Our job is to solve problems until we know for sure it's a no.
Think about it this way, as far as timing goes. Think about everybody you dated in your 20s. Maybe, well, you didn't date a lot because you got married kind of young. But I think about all the people I dated in my 20s. It was a lot.
Oh, you got and... around. Wendy got around.
That's true. That is, I resemble that remark. Yes. but, you know, 27 years and counting. Jay's my one and only. Yeah, but like, you know, so much of it is about timing in your 20s. You know, and I had other marriage proposals that I turned down. And then all of a sudden, you know what? The time is the time. So it's the same in real estate. People are humans are humans.
You had other people ask you to marry you?
Only in the Middle East.
Wow. Okay. I did not know this.
Well, I try to keep things mysterious. I don't share everything with you.
What am I going to find out the next 6 years? I can't wait.
I know. Some secrets shall never be revealed.
Yeah. So going in, like when you get a low offer, you're the listing agent and you get a low offer, right? The first thing is we got to check our mindset, right? We want to make sure our mindset is around, okay, my job is to solve the problem.
Yes.
We know that the seller wants to sell their home. That's why it's on the market. Okay. My job is to solve their problem.
Fix it.
Yeah, fix it. And I don't know what they're going to respond with. Right?
Yeah.
One of the things that I have found to be helpful when I know I'm presenting a low offer where I'm like nervous about what the seller is going to do, right, is to start off right away. Like, I totally understand why your first reaction might be to say no. But before we make that decision, right, let's remember that we don't know fully what the buyer is willing to do next. Like, we know what their first offer is. We don't know what their next move is. The only way we're going to find out is by continuing the conversation. So we can continue the conversation by countering versus just shutting it down, right? So going in and making sure that you're leading the client as well. But it starts, like, if our mindset is they're for sure not going to accept
it. Not going to do it.
Then you're not going to go in with a conversation with them about the pros and cons of why they might want to keep the conversation going.
Yeah, because your job is to sell the house. Your job isn't to get the biggest win possible for your client.
Yep.
It's just not. I mean, you do want that and you need to do what your seller wants you to do. And
that's right.
A lot of times you're just there to actually get the home sold. And I love this idea of writing it out before you have the conversation, that hard conversation. Especially for many of you, as your markets are changing right now, changing drastically, writing this out and becoming a really good being, you know, your words matter, becoming very precise with your wording is actually everything. So that's a great skip. Well, what about if it's a buyer? Do we have a good role play for that?
So with a buyer, right, when they want to make an offer on a house, and like a lot of times I find that agents will talk them out of making the offer on the house because they think the seller is not going to accept it, right?
Yeah.
And so instead of saying that, right, say something like, well, we don't know if the seller is willing to negotiate until we ask. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. My yeah. job is to create opportunities, not assume what someone will or won't do. So let's go ahead and write it up and let's see what they do, right? And so giving the opportunity to start a conversation on the house and or continue the conversation as the listing agent, that's your job. Not to assume, not to predict the future, not to know 100% what's going to happen. Your job is to keep the conversation going or start the conversation.
I love that. You never want to negotiate against yourself.
That's right.
All right. So number two, we've got don't give up on the first buyer. So those of you that have been in the business for a while know that typically the first buyer, the first offer that you get is always the best offer. Why? Because there's always people lying in wait looking for that exact house. And if they jump on it and they're the first offer, they've probably been lying in wait wanting to make an offer on a house just like that for a long time. And I know in Austin, it's ironic, but if someone actually does make an offer on the house, that means they're interested. Like, we are in a market where we've got an average number of showings in the Austin metro area is less than 4 a month. It's 3.7 right now. Compare that to the height of the pandemic when it was something like 17. And so we get a showing, they're interested.
That's right.
We get an offer, they're very interested because they've probably been looking for 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 years in our market. And they maybe have looked at hundreds of homes. So if they're actually making a move, that's a good buyer.
I mean, there has been study after study after study on this topic. I officially crossed my old lady status of being a realtor. I've now been licensed 20 years.
And
yes, I can now make every other agent in the world feel small by telling
them
I've been licensed.
You got your OLR designation?
Yes, yes. And I will tell you, over the years, there's been a lot of studies on this. And the first buyer is typically your best buyer. So making sure that your seller knows that, I think about now, you know, with this seller that I know they're very happy that we got their house under contract. But like, I always think like, should we have been stronger when we got that offer that was 20,000 more, right? A few weeks ago, had we have been stronger letting this seller know, hey, if you reject this, just so you know, the next offer is going to be lower. And sure enough, it was, right?
It was.
And so like making sure that we are communicating with the seller and letting them know that the first offer is typically the best offer. And so you want to do everything in your power to fight for the first buyer before looking for the next one. So when you get that offer as a listing agent, do your best to try to make that work, because we know statistically that that's going to be the best one.
I'd rather negotiate with someone who already loves your home, they're the first buyer, than hope another buyer feels the same way.
That's right.
Yeah.
Boy, is that good.
So good. Who wrote that?
Oh, I don't know. I want to be like her. Yeah.
She probably had her OLR.
Yes, she did. How about you're representing the first buyer and then the seller counters?
Or they get offended.
That's right.
The seller gets offended. Yeah, they get offended.
Yeah.
A lot of offended sellers in this market. So many offended sellers. Yeah, it's really tough. We have one seller, they bought their house at the peak of our market for $880,000. They ended up getting an offer for $550,000. That's what they sold it for.
Brutal.
That's rough.
That's brutal. Rough.
Yeah, they're offended and they've moved on and they're happy. They're happy they don't have that house anymore.
Yeah. And that's going to be one of our points here in a moment. But number three, right, with what stealing your next commission check and or getting that home under contract is not realizing that the offer is a starting point, right? Any offer is just the beginning of negotiations, right? And so like every counter, right? And we said this earlier, but it's so important to, I want to double down on it because every counter keeps the conversation alive.
I love that.
No response will kill it, right?
Yeah.
So a rejection, that kills it. But any counter keeps it alive. And so my golden rule and what I've learned through my OLR designation is that you always—
This is going to become a thing.
It is. Like we need to trademark it right now.
Wendy's Googling OLR.com. Yes. Is the URL available? Yes, it is.
The golden rule is always counter.
Yeah.
Right?
Even a little.
Even a little.
And you know what? Honestly, a lot of, and I hate to say this, but some realtors out there, they're kind of lazy. You know, they don't want to jump through all the hoops of doing all that. And so you've got to be the one that fights for that counter, whatever it looks like. And sometimes, honestly, it's not even the price.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that later. Sometimes it's terms. You know, if you can't give this, at least you can give that. Because at the end of the day, everybody wants a little win. You know, everybody wants a little win. And if they're taking a massive haircut, if they bought the house for $880 and they're selling it for $550, that is tough. You know, that is tough. So what is a win that you can give them, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, just a starting point.
One of the things that I learned to say to a seller on this, and it, which has helped them with like when they feel so like down about this low offer, right, is we don't have to accept the offer, but I also don't think we should reject the offer. When a buyer writes an offer, they want the home because that's why they wrote it. I mean, I always tell sellers, like, think about all that the buyer did before writing the offer, right? They probably looked at least 10 homes in this market. They went back and looked at a CMA and did their research on whether or not they really liked it. They probably stayed in the home for quite some time to identify that they like it.
They had to get pre-approved.
They got pre-approved, and that's a hell of a process these days.
Find a realtor.
Find a realtor. They wrote a deposit check, like an earnest money deposit check. They signed pages and pages of documents to submit the offer. I mean, that's a lot of work.
That's a lot.
They want the house. Like they're showing they want the house, right?
They want it.
So I simply just say to the seller, let's counter and see what they're willing to meet us at. But if we don't counter, we're shutting it down.
Yeah, we do love that. And I think a really nice way to say, you know, when you do get a low offer, typically when I get an offer in, I will, you know, email it over and then I'll write a little note with it and then I'll pick up the phone and talk to them. But a little script that I have is, I know this is less than what we were hoping for and I think we can work with it. So you're always already setting the expectation like, yeah, I think we could work with this, even though they're like, what? You know, so you have to be the one that says, yeah, I think this is going to work.
Yeah. And what I love about that is like both with the buyer's agent, like if you're the listing agent with the buyer's agent, you're having that conversation. And then also with your client, right? And I think so many times as an agent, the sooner you learn that you can influence the mindset of also the other agent through how you talk, through what you say in your email, the more money you will make, the more deals you'll put together, the more homes you will sell.
Well, I think it's also a good reminder to just understand that you don't know why somebody made a low offer. You really don't. It could be they've got somebody in their ear whispering, it's this kind of market, start really low. It could be a cultural thing where you want to go back and forth a lot as far as your negotiation strategies. Like you just don't really know. And that goes back to our number one, like you're not a psychic.
Momentum will create contracts, and how you keep momentum is countering. Silence kills them. Yep. So if you want more contracts, you've got to keep the momentum going and don't shut it down.
If you are a woman who has a $1 million business and is looking to grow to the next level, you need to join me along with my empire building co-hosts at Next Level Growth. It's a live 2-day virtual experience where we share the exact strategies we're using to build and scale our businesses and our lives. The room is exclusive, ladies. We kept it intentionally that way, so every person gets direct coaching, meaningful connection, and real collaboration. If that sounds like the room you need to be in, we'd love to grow with you. Learn more and apply at herbestlife.com/NLG. So number four, texting instead of talking. What did I say just now? Pick up the phone. You know, I feel kind of lucky. I'm a Gen X realtor. I spend a lot of time on the phone. I love the phone. Not everybody does. And text messages communicates facts, but phone calls build trust. And honestly, if you're a top agent in a market, the likelihood of you doing a deal with another top agent in the market, it's a lot more likely that you need to have a good relationship with them than even your client, because you're probably only going to do maybe every 10 years, do a deal with your client. And having that kind of trust in the marketplace, people know you, they trust you, they know you're going to follow through on what you say. And then you can gain a lot of subtlety by picking up the phone. So just really important. Just as soon as you get that, as soon as you get that offer, if you have questions, pick up the phone.
Yeah. So every single day I coach our agents. So they got online. We've got 182 agents right now, and they get on Zoom and they bring up their problems, like anything that's coming in their way of getting a family under contract and or a listing agreement signed or a buyer agreement signed. This by far is what I'm hearing the most that's stealing from them. So this is 182 agents that are very good agents. But when this came up last week on my coaching session, which was why this is in here, because he said, you know, this seller is not accepting this offer. The other agent isn't, we're not working well together. Then I said, well, what exactly happened? What was said? And he picked up his phone and he starts reading. And I was like, are you reading text messages? And he said, yeah, I'm reading text messages. I said, so you're communicating all the details of the offer with our client through text message? And he said, yes. I said, no, no, no. And so I coached him on what to do to, first of all, apologize. Because that's when you're dealing with someone's largest asset, guys, like negotiating it through text message is not what professionals do.
No.
Okay.
Text messages are for yes and no. type of situations. There's text messages are amazing.
They are amazing.
Text messages are great.
Yeah.
Saves you a lot of time. Not for this.
No.
Not for this.
I've always said if it's an FYI text, if it's a conversation that you want to move forward and you want to make sure you're getting this home under contract or get the listing agreement signed, pick up the phone. They need to hear your voice. They need to hear your tone. You need to hear them. Like, you can't solve the problem if you're not hearing them.
Most communication is through tone.
Yes.
Very little communication is actually through words.
Yep.
It's body language and tone. And you're probably not going to be in front of them when you're having this conversation unless you're on a Zoom or something. But so, yeah, so tone is super important.
And at times with some clients I that have said that they want to text, because you will have clients will say, well, my preferred communication is text messaging. You know, us millennials many times want to communicate that way primarily. And I always still call and I just say something simple like, hey, this isn't going to take very long. And this is a big decision. And so if you just take 5 minutes, I can explain things a lot better over the phone. And it's going to make a lot more sense to you. And so just reminding them that this is a big deal. Selling their home, it's their largest asset. Buying a home, it's the biggest purchase they'll ever make. And so reminding, if the client wants to communicate through text, lead them. Let them know that this is a better phone conversation than it is a text message. So, I mean, relationships, right? Like, if you don't have the relationship, you aren't going to put it together. The relationship is everything.
It's everything.
And every relationship problem can be solved through communication. And that's not considered text messaging.
And every problem you have is probably a communication issue.
That's right.
All right. Number five, we've got the other way that you're leaving money on the table is negotiating one line instead of the entire deal. Okay. So I've heard it say before, you can have price, but not terms, or you can have terms and not price. And for those of us that are very fixated on the price, need to understand most agents are negotiating on price. However, professionals are negotiating on values. If you're a fiduciary for your client, you're going to be focused on the value, and everything is negotiable. Everything is negotiable. You got closing costs, when they're going to get the house, repairs, a home warranty, a rate buy down, HOA fees, earnest money, a closing date, personal property, and anything that may or may not come up on the inspection. So that can be, honestly, that could be $100,000 right there.
Yep.
All of those things easily. It could be more. Could be $250,000 on a luxury home. Yeah, I've seen it before. So yeah, so if you're fixated only on the price and you feel like you're losing on the price, well, then think about the other terms. Where can the seller get a win, or where can the buyer get a win?
What can happen sometimes too is that we communicate also just the price to the client. And so it's so important to communicate all of the details of the offer, as Wendy just outlined. When you communicate all of the details, what happens when a counter happens, let's say they counter the price, but they accepted all the other terms. Like Wendy already talked about creating those wins. It's so important to create the wins. And so like when you call your seller, right, and the buyer counters again, right, at the price, and you call the seller and say, I've got good news. They've accepted. And you list out all the things that they've accepted, right? That's outside of the price.
Win, 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 win.
Yep. And the only thing they've asked to change is the price.
That's it.
That's it. Okay. And so if we can come to an agreement on the price, then we've got everything else we wanted.
Perfect example of that is I was working with a seller once, and they actually received two offers. And one offer was higher, and one had a much shorter closing date. And because of the way that they had borrowed money from their 401k to buy the house they were moving into, there was a deadline. And so that deadline was going to cause them to have some serious fees if they didn't pay their 401k back at the time. So if I'd only been fixated on the price, right, and not been curious about that or not had that conversation, I wouldn't have known that. So they actually ended up picking the lower offer that had an earlier close date because of the fees that were in. So that's one example where, you know, it was probably $25,000.
That's also a powerful example back to point number one. Right? Like that buyer's agent, like had she or he had not submitted the offer and assumed that your client wouldn't have taken it because of the price, that wouldn't have ever come together. And so, yeah. Because that agent didn't know that they had this deadline with their 401k, right? And so like making sure that we aren't making assumptions, again, we're going to say this over and over again, is so, so important. Keep the conversation going and making sure that we're not just focused on price, because every contract is a lot more than just the price.
Yeah.
Number six thing that's stealing from you, your next transaction coming together, is feelings cost money. Clients make emotional decisions, okay? Professionals, our job is to help them make informed decisions. So not arguing with them, making sure that we are letting them know both the pros and the cons of not moving forward.
Not getting outraged with the seller when someone makes a low offer. That does not help you.
No.
Okay? It's not your job to... You want to empathize with the client. Yeah, I'm so sorry. I understand. Yeah, I understand how that feels to get a low offer. But you're not like, oh, man, who's that person? Why is this buyer doing it? Why would they do that? You know, so you don't want to go there with them when the sellers are in their feelings, because you're supposed to be, you're a neutral third party. That's why they hired you, right? Because we do live in our feelings. And, you know, Sarah, you and I both sold personal houses, right?
Yep.
And being... And the personal end of your own transaction is very stressful because you don't have someone in between. And so if you have someone who's living in their feelings that's in between, if you got two agents like that, that's a huge problem.
You got to be the calming voice in the midst of the storm for them.
Yep.
And helping them navigate, because it's so important for them not to miss an opportunity because of the way that they feel about it, right? And then with that, like when they have those moments, right, you're calm. You got a steady voice. You are in control.
You may have scripted out what you're going to say in advance.
Yes.
Like I know when I first started, I did it all the time. I wrote out, I counsel my agents, write it out when you're having because you're not mainly ever having these conversations in person.
Yeah.
So you can think about it. What would I say? What would somebody else say? What do I do? How do I know what to say? Because your words do really matter because they hired you to advise them and be their wise counsel.
When I first got my license, I had my mom tell me like each paragraph of the contract, how to explain it with just one sentence. And even in person, I had the paper of my notes and they had the offer, and not one person ever recognized that I was reading. I was reading from my cheat sheet, even in person.
Yeah.
And so half the time people are in their own world and they don't realize.
Yeah.
But I am a big believer in what Wendy said. Write it out. Do your best to listen, but like keep them on track.
Keep them on track.
Right?
Yeah.
And then with that, I think it's so important, like when they emotionally react, and like I've had sellers many times say like, rejected. I'm so insulted. Like, how dare they have come into my home and spend 30 minutes and then send me an offer like this? And they're just so, so upset. And I always validate their feelings, as Wendy said, right? Like, I totally understand why this is insulting. Like, I wanted us to have a higher offer as well. Now, my responsibility is to help you understand both the pros and the cons of what to do next. So here are your options. And let me explain the pros and the cons. Right. And then making sure that they know before making a decision. OK, because when the emotion, they're not thinking about the cons. They're just emotionally reacting. Your job is to make sure that they understand, well, if we don't make this work, we are shutting the conversation off. Right. Which we talked about already. We will add up more days on market. Most times we'll get lower future offers. We're going to have increased competition as more homes come on the market. You've got carrying costs that you're going to be carrying along the way. So you're going over the cons, right? Now, my job is to do whatever you would like me to do, but I want to make sure that you know the pros and the cons of just rejecting the offer. And many times that will ease their emotion, and then they'll start thinking logically.
You can also take a break. You know what I mean? You don't want to take a break for 24 hours, but you can take a break. Like, listen, I can tell that you've got a lot of emotion in this right now, which I totally understand that. I would be there right there with you. So like, let's just think about it for an hour and I'll call, like, obviously not everybody, but just take a break and think about it. And when your person that you've hired says that to you, you're going to think about it. Yeah. And you've got some really great questions here, Sarah. And what I love about questions is, you know, selling isn't telling. Selling is about having the ability to ask great questions. So, and it causes someone to think, and it causes someone to kind of get out of their emotions when you ask them a powerful question. So you can ask them a question, what would happen if the next offer is lower? What if rates increase? What if they go up next month? What if this buyer never comes back? Causes them to think about it. And that's a way of spelling sort of the downside of walking away, but having them self-discover it, which is a way better way for them to actually be able to process and make a decision around it.
And these are great questions to ask. Like, I love the break suggestion. These are great questions to ask, like, just some things to think about. Because what I don't want to have happen is 2 days from now, we lose this buyer, and 2 days from now, you feel regret over losing the buyer. I want to make sure that we're thinking everything through ahead of time before we make the decision. And just like letting them know, like, it's okay to pause. It's okay to slow down. This is a big decision. Let's think about it and think through the pros and cons.
That is what is nice about a slower market is there's more thinking, you know, like in 2020 and 2021, where everything was going crazy. It was hard because you did have to make sort of like split second decisions, at least in our market. And, you know, let's wait a hot second. You know, let's think about it. Yeah. All right. So number 7, our last one, our last way to save more money and make more money in real estate is you want to treat obstacles like problems to solve. So one of the best, I think, skills that you can have as a realtor is to be a problem solver. And it's a skill that some people are born with, and it's also a skill that you can get better at. Right? So you can become a better problem solver. I know this is true because I've become a better problem solver over the 17 years I've been in real estate. I'm an OLR myself, and I've seen it with other people on my team because this is literally what we're doing all day long. And you have two kinds of problem solving. You've got sort of like logical problem solving, which is to take a big problem and really think about it. But then you've also got rapid problem solving. And some of you have both of those skills, and some of you only have one. Either way is fine, but you need to know which one you have, because a rapid problem solver is someone who's really good in an emergency. Maybe something horrible is happening and you're able to make split second decisions. Sarah, I know you're more of a like a slow processor, right? So if you know this about yourself, you can also say, you know what? I'm going to take a hot minute. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to talk to somebody that I know in my office because I want to be the best that I can be for you. And problem solving is just one of the most important skills really out there.
Every objection, every roadblock, every problem that you run into has multiple solutions. There's not just one way to solve it. And so the best negotiators stay curious. So always staying curious about other ways to solve it, brainstorming with other agents, like never letting your pride, or like my meemaw used to say, get too big for your britches, like get in the way of you asking, like, hey, have you guys been able to solve this in any other way? This is the roadblock that I'm in. But like always asking for solutions and creating new solutions, because it's never just one. There's a lot of different ways to solve problems. But pausing and coming up with different solutions, and or if you are gifted, I mean, Seychelles is by far the best, like the most rapid problem solver I've probably ever seen, honestly.
Maybe the world, I don't know, probably.
Seriously.
Sometimes we sit in meetings and we're like, whoa.
I mean, the meeting's not over and she's already done it and solved it. Yeah, and yeah. We're just still talking about it. So, but like, I'm not gifted in that way, right? And so like, slowing down and making sure that we're thinking through all of the things and not seeing it as like a dead end. Like so many agents see things as dead ends and realizing this is just a problem. This is the next problem to solve.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's some examples. Maybe you've got a buyer that's short on cash. Well, you can increase the purchase price. You can offer seller concessions. The payment's too high. Do a rate buy down. We're seeing a lot of that in our market here in Austin. Seller needs more money. Well, let's talk about a different financing structure. Inspection problems. Well, give them a credit instead of repairs. There's so many options as far as inspection issues go. Closing timing. You can do a temporary occupancy. This literally just happened with a client of ours that really needed to move a lot of their stuff out of their house so that they could rent it, right? And, you know, we got a temporary occupancy for And the seller was motivated to do that because they knew that's the only way that they could close. So yeah, so being a super, super good problem solver. I mean, I wonder, like, how do you become a better problem solver? Have you ever thought about that? I wonder if there's a way to, like, I feel like Jay would have research around this, but.
That's a great question.
Puzzles, I guess.
Yeah, puzzles. I also think, like, so much of this is who you surround yourself with. So much of life. I mean, we talk about that so much on the podcast.
True.
If you want to be a better problem solver, who are you surrounding yourself with? And if you could surround yourself with problem solvers, you automatically will become a better problem solver.
You also get a lot more stuff done.
Yes. Sometimes also the solution isn't in that one transaction. It's in the next one. And so that's one thing that I'm seeing a lot of our agents miss. So we had a situation where all the terms were agreed upon, except the seller wanted a 2-day post-settlement occupancy. So they wanted to stay in the home 2 days because they needed moving time, and they were determined about it. And the transaction wasn't going to come together over those 2 days because the buyer didn't want to give it. They needed to move into the house. And we were helping the seller buy their next house. And so I said to the agent, I said, well, have you asked for a pre-settlement occupancy of the next house? Like, because we can solve the same problem, but over here. And sure enough, they asked, and the seller was like, that's fine. You can get the keys 2 days earlier. So we solved the problem, but in a different way, in a different transaction.
So many ways to solve that problem. You could put anybody up in a hotel for 2 days, and one of them could pay for it, or they could split it. Like, there are just so many ways to solve a problem like that. Yes, it seems like that. You're like, we're not going to let this not close for 2 days.
Yes. We need to record an episode just on that. Like, what are, like, just name all the problems that people see and then, like, the ways that we know to solve them. That would be powerful.
Yeah.
Oh, my
so
goodness.
Fun. So fun. Yeah. So fun. So fun. Yeah. Well, guys, today's been awesome. Hopefully, just by listening to this podcast, you put more dollars in your pocket. That's our goal here on the Empire Building Podcast. So you can take those dollars, either build your business or go build your big life. And thank you, as always, for being amazing listeners. And please, if this is an episode that spoke to you, especially in our market right now, please subscribe and share this with a friend who really needs it. So thank you guys so much and have a great day.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.